Story 5 of The Furthest Reaches
of Space.
Ed Reed Short Sci-Fi, Volume 8. X Marks the Asteroid by Ross Rucklin. Part 1. The Unterzoida map was out of hiding. Relayed on a grapevine, it spanned the planets. The news caught on big in Marsport. Bigger Bales sat at a beer bottle-coloured glass desk in his underworld retreat, announcing his intent to claim the reward money that for 85 years had been piling up at compound interest in the Terra First National Bank of New York.
"Ralph Unterzoider is here in Marsport," he stated. "Like all Unterzoiders, he's clever, and he's dangerous, and he's shifty. He'll travel the quickest course you ever saw. At the moment, he's got his identity pretty well covered up under the name of Carruthers Straley. In the last 3 weeks, he's organized a band of settlers from Satisfield City, who call themselves Titan Settlers Limited. Not that I'm fooled. I'm not saying the Unterzoida Hibernaculum is on Titan. I'm not even saying Unterzoida has the map. But I'm willing to bet he's got a pretty good idea where the map is. I'm also willing to bet that his father died without leaving him a cent, and that he organized Titan Settlers Limited just to get himself a free ride out Saturn Way. He's capable of that kind of reasoning."
Bigger Bales smiled rosily and reached for his hat. One of his men held the door open for him.
"Right now on my way to see Carruthers Straley. Maybe he will cut in with me. If not..."
He thoughtfully rubbed at the fat of his big jaw.
"If not, I'll help him hang himself."
Ralph Unterzoider, fourth generation descendant of the infamous Unterzoiders, emerged testily from the glass and sand building, where he had just set up a law office under the name of Carruthers Straley. No sooner had he set foot to the glass sidewalk than he was aware a big, smiling man had fallen to step beside him. He backed up against the wall of the building, his eyes wide and cautious, behind dark glasses.
"What do you want?"
he snapped. Bigger Bales smiled, introduced himself. Unterzoider looked around as if ready to make a break for it. Bales stood in front of him. He shook his head.
"I'm not going to hurt you, Mr. Unterzoider."
At mention of the name, Unterzoider smiled arrogantly.
"Really, does one have no privacy? But perhaps one of your caliber is well acquainted with the advantages of using an alias."
"There are advantages," Bigger nodded. "Your advantage lies in heading a group of settlers who don't know you're using them to help you find the asteroid where your ancestors have been sleeping for the past 80-odd years." Unterzoider's cane whipped around nervously.
"I know nothing about a map."
Bigger's jowls quivered with mirth.
"7 weeks ago," he pointed out, "your father died. He told you the map was hidden in an old book called Tertium Organum, a key to the enigmas of the world, by someone named Auspensky."
Unterzoider's eyes moved desperately to the street, down which a single gyromobile moved.
"I have an appointment," he said stiffly. "Now if you'll permit me to make my way before they turn the rainmakers on."
"It won't rain for 10 minutes. Better let me finish, if you don't want your precious settlers to know who you really are. As soon as your aunt heard about your father's death, she put the old Unterzoider house up for auction to pay your father's creditors. The furniture went mostly to junk dealers, the rest to museums. All the books, some 10,000 of them, were bought by a big New York used book company, Frangi and Sons Limited. Half of these books, the ones whose titles all began with the letters of the alphabet up through M, were kept in their New York branch. The remainder were sent to open a bookstore in Marsport. By the time you got to Marsport from Earth, the book was reported already sold, to a person unknown. That's all true, isn't it? After having failed to find the map, Mr. Unterzoider, you then sent the story to a newspaper, anonymously."
"I did?"
Unterzoider looked arrogantly at Bales. "Yes." Bigger's eyes narrowed. "Why?" Unterzoider surged angrily away from the wall.
"I'm not interested in your questions. I have my chosen mission in life. It is not the making of money."
He brandished his cane.
"I warn you, Mr. Bales," he cried. "I'm a nervous man. If I'm not permitted to leave..."
Bigger spread his hands, astonished.
"Don't think for a minute I'm keeping you. The only suggestion I wanted to make was that you and I could work together."
Unterzoider took off his glasses. There were red marks around his eyes where the glasses had taken hold. He had inherited the famous thin nose and receding chin of the Unterzoiders. His pale, thin lips worked nervously.
"I work alone, Mr. Bales," he said haughtily. "And I work best when such as you try to set your pitiful little traps. Threaten me as you will, nothing can keep me from my purpose. And now, good day."
Bigger's voice was filled with disgust.
"Your purpose being, of course, to find Asteroid X and free your ancestors so they can go to work on the solar system again."
Unter Zoida glared, primly returned his glasses to his nose and stalked off.
"Scoundrel,"
he muttered, putting his hand over his heart. He gasped. It was racing, and he was sweating, trembling. His mother, the Unter Zoida matriarch, had been quite right. He should take care of his health. By the time he caught a one-wheeled gyromobile that came bowling down a glass street, he was feeling much better.
"Take me to the Hotel de Marche,"
he told the driver. He leaned back comfortably, gloved hands resting on the head of his cane while he looked around him. A strange glass-domed city set in the heart of Mars's desert wastelands. A thriving city, with low buildings touching the glass roof of the dome. The rainmaker went on, the first drops splattering down the overhead sprinkler system. Unter Zoida grinned.
"Driver, driver,"
he cried, rapping smartly with his cane.
"Do you want me to catch my death?"
Driver hurriedly caused the separate halves of the glass steel cupola to fold over the car. Unter Zoida settled back injuredly. Have you ever found your thoughts lacking clarity? Have you ever found your mind wandering when you're trying to concentrate on what you're doing? And how this is especially important when you're trying to work? I do. Every morning I try to read a book, and I can barely process what's going on. Generally, a cup of coffee will help. But then again, too many cups of coffee gives me a headache, makes you feel ill, and is generally bad for you. What if you could get that feeling without having to neck so much coffee? I got that feeling from Magic Mind Energy Drink. It's a great alternative to the third or fourth cup, or however much coffee you need in the morning, that last cup. It means that now I only drink one cup of coffee a day, which is significantly better for my health. And better than that, it improves my mental clarity to a point where I can now read that book, where I can now, when a complicated task comes my way through work, I can process it and do it better, which is good for me and good for my boss. Over time, it's helped my memory. Apart from simply processing information better, I can retain it better, so I can remember that famous book, and I can remember that complicated thought I had yesterday. When I start work the next day, I can remember the complicated thought I had from the day before. All from drinking Magic Mind Energy Drink. I thoroughly recommend it. Take advantage of the offer I'm about to make you. Try Magic Mind Energy Drink with discount code EDMAKES20 and with the link www.magicmind.com/EDMAKES. At the registration desk of the Hotel de Mars, he asked for and was shown to the room of Mr. Nathaniel and Miss Fayette Beecher. The door was thrown open by a tanned blonde girl in smart grey jodhpurs and slick boots. Her face at first registered a nervousness. Then it smoothed.
"Oh,"
she sang out, blue eyes widening and taking him in from head to toe.
"You must be Mr. Straley."
She cocked her lively face cutely to one side.
"Are you?"
Unter Zoida's heart banged. He bit his lip. This was exactly the kind of girl his dead mother warned him to stay away from. Coquettish. Sexy. Treacherous, like most females. And he had lately noticed to his dismay that he, an Unter Zoida, was becoming far too susceptible to such unhealthy influences.
"I am Mr. Straley,"
he said coldly.
"Carruthers Straley, founder of Titan Settlers Limited. Shall I come in?"
"Please do. For a moment I lost my wits."
She's making a play for me, like all females, he thought. Discouragedly, Unter Zoida went in. He sat down on a sponge plastic chair, resting his gloved hands on his cane and looking around the girl sternly.
"Daddy,"
she sang out.
"Mr. Straley is here."
A man with a half-bald head and a deep tan lunged into the room carrying a heavy rocket gun. His grin was wide, his voice reedy and enthusiastic. He was happy to know Mr. Straley. He laid the gun tenderly on the floor, and Zaida looked at it distrustfully. Beecher's reedy laugh sounded.
"It's not cocked," he explained. "Caught me right in the middle of a clean and polished job. That old gun of mine's been everywhere, mister. Most of the moons of Jupiter, out on the deserts, even Africa. Yes, sir. Our exploring expeditions have taken us into every corner of the solar system that's available."
The girl whipped open a drawer in the bottom of a boxy chair made of crystal glass deal.
"And here's my pet."
She reached in to pull out a long-snouted neutron gun with a triple trigger. And Zoida's heart banged for the third time in an hour. In the drawer was one other object, Tertium Organum, a key to the enigmas of the world. An old book, a musty book. The book from his beloved dead father's library. The book that held the Unterzijde map. His breath hissed. Beecher leaned solicitously forward.
"Anything wrong, Mr. Straley?"
"Oh, no, nothing," said Unterzijde, pain wrenching his face.
"But I'm not a healthy man. My heart..."
"Oh, what a shame."
Fayette leaned over him, dizzying him with her perfume. She put her warm little hand on his forehead. She held his wrist to feel his pulse. She shook her blonde curls vigorously.
"No, no fever. The pulse did seem to race a little when I held your hand. Outside of that..."
She surveyed him judiciously.
"I bet you're as healthy as a Venusian peat dog."
"Oh, come now," protested Beecher. "If the man says he's got a galloping heart, that's what he's got. Think of the courage, the idealism, the sheer fortitude of this man, who has gathered together a group of settlers to brave the dangers of a jungle world like Titan, a planet no one has ever attempted to colonize. I personally hand it to the man."
There was a fawning admiration on his unshaven, grinning face. Unterzijde settled back in his chair, feeling put upon.
"I'm afraid of guns," he told Fayette petulantly. "If you please put it away, besides..."
He drew a clipping from his billfold.
"I'm already convinced of your prowess as explorers."
The headlines on the clipping read, "Explorers return from Ganymede Ice Tundra. Father and daughter make unique team."
"It says quite a bit about the expeditions you two have headed. Needless to say, I'm impressed. I am here, of course, to make you a proposition."
He explained his purpose at some length. For several weeks he'd been engaged on a project dear to his heart. He believed in the future of the human race. He wanted to spread mankind's dominion even beyond the moons of Jupiter. Titan had been viewed by only two men, both of whom stated it was livable. It had soil, it had vegetation. Also, it had dangerous animal life.
"That's for us," said Fayette stoutly.
She accidentally pointed the neutron gun at Unterzijde. She was squirming around on her chair with repressed vitality. Her eyes melted on him. He wished he could get over the feeling that she was laying it on too thick. That perfume. He must not allow himself to be affected. He cringed from the gun. She hastily put it on the floor. He wondered how accidental it might have been. Probably these cheap opportunists were perfectly capable of killing. He would have to watch his step. They had the map all right. The bookseller's description of Fayette had been quite correct and helpful. Fortunately, the bookseller had been willing to accept a bribe, not to give anybody else the information. He spoke again.
"When I received your visual call, Miss Beecher, I at once felt that Titan settlers could work with you. I seriously discussed with them the possibility of giving you and your father titular command of the expedition."
"Oh?" said Fayette. "You've already been capitalized?"
And Zoida coughed delicately.
"My intrepid settlers are composed of young husbands and wives and their children. I was able to sell them. That is, the magic allure of a new world was really all that was necessary to convince them that Titan is where their destiny lay. They sold all their belongings and invested the funds with me as treasurer of the organization."
Beecher smacked his hands together enthusiastically.
"Fine, fine. There's nothing the daughter and I like better than to push on into a new frontier. Mr. Straley, for 20,000 credits, we're bought."
Unterzijde sat bolt upright.
10,000 credits.
He said severely.
"Is the top amount we can offer. That is final, with 1,000 credits in advance."
He whipped out a checkbook. He adjusted his glasses. Primly, he wrote a check and extended it with a jabbing motion, holding it for perhaps 30 seconds before Beecher's crestfallen face turned toward his daughter. Fayette was looking with intense interest at the check.
"Why not? Mr. Straley, like you, We idealists. Money means hardly anything. I think you've made a deal.
Beecher stowed the cheque in his wallet with satisfaction.
Now we'll get busy. Of course, we'll have to have a drawing account. We'll have to discuss details, such as the number of settlers to be transported so I can buy or charter the proper type of spaceship. There's a matter of building supplies to be bought, grain, seeds, food. 1,000 details which you can leave entirely in our hands, Mr. Straley. And while we're at it, I'd like to shake your hand. There's very few people who'd endanger their own lives to further the progress of mankind.
The experience left Unterzoider weak. He looked appealingly at Fayette.
I wonder if a glass of water,
he said feebly. Hurriedly, she disappeared to the apartment kitchen. Unterzoider slumped lower in the seat, breathing hard.
Maybe,
he told Beecher helplessly.
A shot of whiskey would do the trick better.
Sure thing,
Beecher went after his daughter. As soon as they were both out of the room, Unterzoider got up and pulled open the drawer containing Tertium Organum, a key to the enigmas of the world. Quickly he unfolded the chart in the back of the book. The map should be there. It wasn't. He slapped the drawer shut, sank feebly back to his seat. The Beechers were gone an inordinately long time. He thought he heard them whispering in the kitchen. Then Beecher lunged back into the room, bearing a jigger of no doubt cheap rye. Unterzoider gulped it down and put the glass to one side. Fayette was admiring.
"For a man in poor health," she exclaimed. "You take it without a whimper, or a chaser."
"Eh?" Unterzoider blinked, then drew himself up stiffly. "Whiskey is the only medicine my doctor permits, and now let's get down to the matter of the contract." 1 month later. Ralph Unterzoider was furious. He stalked the darkened decks of the trembling spaceship Ares, a slick 100-tonner with 60 square feet of firing surface, and reflected that the Beechers were making a worse sucker out of him than he'd expected them to. First, they were a pair of fakers. That much had been obvious from the start, with that phony newspaper write-up, or that bragging about their knowledge of firearms when they didn't even know enough to keep a weapon pointed toward the floor. Well, he'd expected that much, but to discover they did not even have basic knowledge of how to outfit an expedition. They had actually been ordering lumber for building, until he pointed out the climate of Titan might be kinder to prefabricated glass steel sections. They had actually paid out money for seeds, bulbs, and saplings, until he showed that all farming on Titan must, for the present, be on an experimental or at best highly speculative basis. Not only that, they had attempted to charter a ship twice as big as needed, one that used large quantities of chemical fuels. That ridiculous error had been amended with a smaller ship, sporting atomic gas thrust. As for the captain and crew, they'd been hired by Unterzoider himself, and, by means of the secret passage of 1,000 credits from Titan settlers' funds to Captain Foshag, the captain and crew were bought. Unterzoider balanced himself angrily down a companionway. As he passed a hanging ventilator, the drumbeat and skittering rhythm of a jury-rigged orchestra echoed up from the ballroom. A dance was in progress. Unterzoider smiled sentimentally. Nothing like giving the settlers a run for their money. Of course, he reflected dourly, Fayette Beecher had got the best of him in the matter of using the drawing account. Unterzoider scowled. What had got into him? Somehow, Fayette's roving blue eyes and fiery touch did their work on him. Next thing he knew, he was in duress, being dragged on the arm of that fluffy creature from one dress shop to another. An expense account to buy swirling party dresses, with a smidgen here and there for fancy explorers' outfits. The memory of his folly made Unterzoider squirm. He sighed heavily as he came to Seedeck. Anyway, by his own cleverness, he had a ship, he had the Beechers, who had the map, and the Hibernaculum asteroid, where his dozen infamous ancestors were sleeping away the decades under the influence of a potent, forbidden drug called somnoline, was somewhere out near Titan, or had been. That was the one thing he'd remembered when, as a child, his father showed him the legendary map. At least he was headed for the area where the asteroid might be. And so, he reflected glumly, that arrogant, impossible, bigger Bales. The Beecher's double stateroom was on C deck. Just as he turned an L in the corridor, he ran head-on into a gaily running figure clad in a fluffy party dress. For a moment, they struggled in an attempt to regain their balance, and when Unterzoider came out of it, he was holding Fayette Beecher tightly, and he was kissing her warm little face.
she responded just as energetically, and suddenly he woke up to the horror of the role he had assumed. He shoved her away. She stumbled backward, and there was a glassy tinkling sound.
"Oh, your glasses!"
cried Fayed, making a grab for them. He grabbed too, suddenly convinced he'd gone blind.
"They're broken, Ralph, honey," she said. "You look so much better without them."
She flung her arms around him again, pressing him back to the wall. Her lips drooped disappointedly.
I'm fond of you, she said unhappily. But you're so darn peculiar. You fell over yourself kissing me. Now you're backing off. What's wrong?
And Zoraida was scared. It came as a shock to him that the extreme emergency of the situation had given him, by some hypnotic process, better vision than he'd ever had. In spite of the darkness of the hall, he could see that Fayette was ravishing. She could make a strong man weak. Well, he would not give her that opportunity. Besides, something she'd said just now, something he couldn't put his finger on, had subconsciously frightened him. What? These treacherous beaches. Maybe she was using her indomitable weapon to win him over. To what? Perhaps to cut him in on the map. X marks the spot indeed. X was a moving asteroid. It had been moving for some 80-odd years since the map was made. To find its present location was a problem in celestial mechanics. The map would have to be deciphered. Not only that, the original maker of the map, being an Unterzoider, had undoubtedly confused the issue by making the job hard even for a mathematician. Naturally, the Beaches hadn't dared take the map to anybody for deciphering. To do so might have brought the whole criminal element in the solar system after them. That, of course, was a little thing Unterzoider himself had arranged when he anonymously gave the details of the story to the press. The Beaches had been boxed in. Now, in desperation, the Beaches probably figured that if Fayette could make Carruthers Straley fall in love with her, that he, being a lawyer, might have a devious enough mind to think like an Unterzoider and decipher the map and not betray them. They did not understand that Ralph Unterzoider, alias Carruthers Straley, worked alone. They would find it out, and so would Bigger Bales. He answered her direct question stiffly.
I shall continue to back off, Fayette. Love is an emotion which can be defined in various unflattering terms. I would not care to tremble your romantic castles. My mother...
Ah, your mother!
She leaped upon the word with a knowing and very wide grin. Then she took advantage of his pinned position against the bulkhead to kiss him again, determinedly and hard. For a wild half of eternity, his senses were swept away in a skittering whirlwind. Then by main force he tore away and lunged down a corridor.
Mr. Straley!
There was a bubble of repressed laughter.
I was going to ask if you'd take me to the dance.
To be concluded.